It's not that young. He did have too many hats.
Yes. There you go.
Now you suffer. You pay the price. We're using the same page from last week, entitled Bi'at Kulchem. They had asked me at the center, as we're moving towards Yom Yerushalayim this year, in 3 weeks' time, the 50th anniversary of unification of Yerushalayim. Those who were here yesterday for Rabbi Gold's talk, after the middle of davening of Yom Atzmaut, I love it when he says, those who get it and those who don't get it. Well, UNESCO doesn't get it. They don't get it. You know, it doesn't bother me so much that UNESCO doesn't get it. It bothers me that there are plenty of Jews in the world who haven't gotten it yet either. That bothers me a lot more. But okay. So they asked all the teachers to, you know, give Yerushalayim subject matter, special shiurim, whatever. They wanted to hit 50 shiurim. So I had suggested a few topics. I figured that the shiur on Yom Yerushalayim, we'll have one, I'm not sure yet, but if it'll be, because it's a Wednesday. I have no problems giving the shiur that Wednesday morning. Or the week before. So then they called me back and they said they're almost up to 50. They haven't hit 50, so maybe we can use two of your topics. And I said, just let me know through the Torah tidbits and I'll know what I'm supposed to talk about. And try. So in the meantime, we're still on Sefer Mitzvot, but I already hit, because of Yom Atzmaut coming up, the whole topic of Bi'at Kulchem, which relates to Yerushalayim. We'll see that today, right now. So just to recap, last week, we looked at that first source. The Rambam writes 14 books of the Mishnah Torah. The Rambam begins every book that he's written with the type of Besad, Beseyata Deshmaya, Bezrat Hashem, but except that he quotes a pasuk from Avraham Avinu, B'Shem Hashem El Olam. Every Sefer that the Rambam writes begins with B'Shem Hashem El Olam, and that's after the phrase Vayiven Sham Mizbeach, Vayikra B'Shem Hashem El Olam, which means that Avraham Avinu was out there to publicize the fact that there's one God, and he's the one who kicks off this mission, and this mission is our mission, and it's the mission until the days of the success of the mission. Well, finally, we will have succeeded. I believe I mentioned last week that when considering our scorecard in history, I mean, how well are we doing in this particular mission? So, considering what the Rambam says in the censored version of 11th chapter of Luchot Malachim, it was censored because there's Christian material there, that is, the Rambam refers to Yeshu and Christianity, and we were very, very nervous about having that kind of things in print, and so the printers in Europe censored it all out, as they censored out certain lines of in Gemara and even in Tefillah. You know, we say "V'anachnu korim mishtachavim modim lifnei melech b'chayim lachim in aleinu shemeach." That's how I grew up. Yeah, you come to Eretz Yisrael, and now it's Shehem Mishtachavim Lehevel Verik Umitpalalim El El Lo Yoshia. You know, they bow down to gods who won't help them. Vanachnu, but we. Vanachnu means it's the middle of the sentence. And we, Vanachnu Korim Mishtachavim. Yet in Chutz La'aretz, it was censored out. And because of the sensitivity, they didn't want to provoke a pogrom, as if the church needed, good excuses for a pogrom, but we didn't want to give them excuses. And in the Rambam also, and other Sifrei Halacha, things were censored out. So the Rambam, whenever he uses the word Goy, so the printer printed Akum. Akum is abbreviation of Dei Kochavim U'Mazalot, which in English means pagans. As if to say, we're not talking about you. We're not talking about you, Christians. We're talking about pagans, Shelpan, though once upon a time, pagans. So the printers had instructions, almost like word processing. It says Goy, you print Akum. It says Nochri, you print Akum. It says Avodah Zarah, you print Akum. And that's what it said. There's only one problem. When the Rambam in Hilchot Melachim talks about the scenario, what's our relationship to a Goy who does not serve Avodah Zarah? So it says Akum Shelo Avad Akum. You get this absurd sentence in the printed Rambam. People don't understand what we're talking about. It means, now today, because of Rav Kapach coming from Yemen and bringing uncensored texts and manuscripts that were found in the Gniza fragments of, obviously, uncensored texts, pre-print, and so on. So now we have reconstructed the Rambam. What I have here actually is the Shapter Frankel edition of the Rambam that began publication in 1975 and finished just a few years ago. So it's uncensored already. So there you have, it doesn't say Akum Shelo Avad Akum. It says Goy Shelo Avad Avodah Zarah. It's exactly what the Rambam wrote. That makes sense. That's a sentence that makes sense. And so too with many of the other censored portions. But the Rambam writes, B'Shem Hashem Ke'el Olam. So in this uncensored version of Hilchot Melachim, tail end of Perek Yud Aleph, he refers to Christianity and Islam. He says, although it might be hard for us to relate to these religions somewhat positively in light of the suffering that we endured throughout the ages, but if we just put that aside for a second, he says, Christianity and Islam has brought the pagan world a step closer to Vaya Hashem L'melech HaKol HaAretz. Islam even more than Christianity. And it's interesting, the Pope was now in Egypt after a rash of piguim against the Coptic Christian church, was not a Catholic church, but what's the difference, the Christians. And he went there and he makes this dogmatic statement that religion should never, ever be the source of violence. This is the head of the Catholic Church. It shows he has a Goyish cup. He doesn't... A little medieval Jewish history, just a little, not just medieval Jewish history, modern Jewish history. I remember when Golda Meir, Alav Shalom, visited, first time Prime Minister of Israel visited the Pope. It was Pope Paul VI who was anti-Semit, and by the way, he died on Tisha B'Av, and the Dvar even commented in Boston about this, 1976. He said it was Minyana de Yarma. So Gemara says when Caesarea, which is the port that Romans kept as a capital here in Israel, when Caesarea was up, so Yerushalayim was down. Yerushalayim was down, Caesarea was up. But if you say both are up or both are down, don't believe it. It's one or the other. And the Rav said the anything that talks about the downfall of the Catholic Church to the Rav was up for Yerushalayim. He said this on Tisha B'Av in 1976. But in 1969, 2 years after the Six-Day War, so Golda Meir visited Pope Paul VI, and the Pope had the chutzpah of telling her that we have to have rachmanis on the poor Palestinians. You know, that was 2 years after the war. So Golda, you know, she was stronger than Thatcher of England. You know, Golda really had fortitude and backbone. She says, yeah, you're right. Except that, you know, my earliest childhood memories were the Kishon of pogroms in 1905. This is the first thing she remembers as a kid. You don't tell us about Rachmanis. You know, I don't mind talking about Rachmanis, but I'm not going to hear it from you. Can you imagine? She says to the Pope, it's a Kiddush Hashem. Just give it right back. That's all. Because he had a lot of chutzpah. And you thought he could get away with it. The Rambam says that if you just put all this aside, all the suffering from the Christianity and Islam, and just think purely objectively, theologically, Islam is a monotheistic religion. So they're not of the Avodah Zarah at all. And that impacts on no small matters of halacha. In a moment I'll get to an example. And Christianity, the Rambam says the problem is the Trinity, what they call Av Ben Ruach HaKodesh. So that shows a divisibility in the divine. So that's a problem in terms of the world of Avodah Zarah. It's a detail in Hilchot Avodah Zarah. It's what's called Avodah Zarah B'Shituf. That's the halachic phrase. There's a partnership there. So, you know, if Yeshu was divine, so one second, where's the Kadosh Baruch Hu in the picture? Who? So there's a certain divisibility. So Rama felt that there was some, it smelled from Avodah Zarah. There were great Rishonim in the Middle Ages in Ashkenaz who were more liberal on this. Some fear saying because they lived in Christian countries. It was easier for Rama to say what he said sitting in Egypt in a Muslim country. But you know, those sitting in France and Germany had to be a little bit more careful how they defined the absolute halacha. You know, publicly, maybe what they said in the Beis Medrash, but publicly in their writings. So Rabbi Rama felt that even Christianity, with its problems of the Trinity, they do believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, a Borei Olam, and so on. You know, and then the monkey trial in the 19th century with regard to evolution. So you know, the whole issue at stake in the court was the validity of the Torah itself. And it wasn't Jews fighting for it was Christians fighting for it. Of course they believe in the in Torah. They believe there was a New Testament afterwards, but they believe in Torah also. So Rambam felt that Christianity and Islam, which make up a good chunk of the world today, brought the world closer to Vayasham L'melech HaKol Haaretz, which means, according to Rambam's assessment, our grade, our mark in terms of how we're doing in the mission of Avraham Avinu, it's clearly not bad. It's not perfect, it's not there yet, but it's not bad. Far from being a failure. Far, far from being a failure. So that this is very, very important. B'shem Hashem El Olam. The Rambam believes he's continuing the mission of Avraham Avinu on different levels. Now's not time to discuss where the Rambam saw himself in the footsteps of Avraham Avinu, but one is in this theological, and that's why he always begins with the sefer, every sefer, B'shem Hashem El Olam. And then, as mentioned last week, he gives a pasuk from either Tehillim or Mishlei, which usually has a word or some variation of the word of the name of the book, of the 14 books of Mishnah Torah, and the pasuk itself reflects the theme of the sefer. So in the sefer Zra'im, which the Rambam is going to talk about, the agricultural mitzvot of Eretz Israel, he quotes the pasuk from Tehillim, Perek Kuf Yutet. That's that longest perek in Tehillim. Right? It's 176 psukim, because it's 22 times 8. 8 psukim of Aleph and 8 psukim of Bet. We use it at Askarot, at the cemeteries, when we're looking for the name. So first name is Moshe, that's going to be easy. It's just 8 of Mem, 8 of Shin, and 8 of Hay. But, you know, what if there's an Askara, I hope he lives till 122 years. My grandfather always wished everybody for inflation, a little extra. Lives on Mev, Esrim Plus. A boy in my, when I was in 8th grade, so I was the Gabbai. I have a lot of Gabbai experience. And you know, certain names you don't forget. Because, you give him an Aliyah, but you don't forget. And this kid's name was Yeshua Herschel Simcha Elimelech Ben Chaim Yaakov Halevi. Now, at this guy's askara, I mean, they're going to be sitting all day. But it's almost like the old Nechama Monday night. We had a wonderful, wonderful davening with the chazan and the choir and everything. It was all very nice. Except we got the Sfiris HaOmer, so they started doing a whole piece of Hinnani Muchanam Zuman, Hinnani Muchanam Zuman, Hinnani Muchanam Zuman, Sheva Shabbatot Timot Yena, they sang 7 times. Sheva Shabbatot Timot Yena, Sheva Shabbatot Timot Yena. Okay, I counted it 7 times. Okay, very nice. I said, the guy, by the time he finished, I counted the next day. I mean, it took 24 hours to finish Hinnani Muchanam Zuman. You know, he missed a day. So the Rambam Kwank, in that long perek, which is, I say, 176 psukim, which is in itself interesting, because there's 176 psukim in the longest parsha in the Chumash, Parshat Naso, and the longest Masechet Shas is Baba Bat, 176 dapim. So here, Tehei Yadcha Le'azreini Ki Pikudecha Bacharti, that we ask Kadosh Baruch Hu that he should be of help to us, because we have chosen, Ki Pikudecha Bacharti, we have chosen, I have chosen, says David Melach, your commands. So therefore he says that Kadosh Baruch Hu should extend his hand to help me when I need help. And here's a play on word, on the word Ezer and Zerah. I mentioned this right last week. Zorea Tzedakot. The Ezer and Zerah, the Zraim, the mitzvot of Zraim, are basically there to teach Am Yisrael to be a giving nation. A giving nation. So even Shemitah, which you think are all these lofty ideas of Shavtaret, Shabbat Lashem, that's how it appears in Parshat Behar, that it's a type of expanded or multiplied Shabbat, Shabbat to the seventh power. Okay, besides that, all nice ideas in Shemitah, and Yovel, Shechrur Avadim, but the first time Shemitah appears in the Chumash is Parshat Mishpatim. V'ashvi'it tishmetena untashta, ve'achlu evyonei amecha. It's so that the ownership becomes suspended, and the poor people can just walk in and take. So it's a mitzvah of giving. It's a mitzvah of giving. No less than leket, shikcha, and peya. You have the various mitzvahs of the field, of what you have to leave a corner over for the poor people. And if when you're harvesting, so a few stalks drop to the floor, so just leave it. That's a leket. And then if you already put them in the bound them up on the field, but as you collected them and brought them to the silo, you overshot one or two bundles, so just leave it. That's called shikicha. Shikicha is the only mitzvah in the asay in the Torah that you can't have kavana, you can't have intention to fulfill the mitzvah. It's always retroactively. You can't say hinani muhammad zuman kei mitzvah asay shel shikicha. I want to fulfill the mitzvah. Okay, I forgot. Where did I leave that last bundle of wheat? You can't do that. It's only after you forgot it, so just leave it already, and it becomes a gift for the aniyim ve'evyonim, for the poor people. I remember once when one of my daughters now she's no small Talmid Chacham, when she was in kindergarten or first grade, and they came home on Friday, and she was talking about Parshat HaShavua, and she learned about the three mitzvot of the field. Okay, what are they? She says, Leket, Peah, Vashlishit Shachachti. I forgot the third one. I said, that's it. It's Shikha. She said it honestly, you know. I forgot, what was the third one? Shikha, right. Forgot. So Ezraimi. So if you look at the next line on source one, it says Sefer Shvi'i. All this the Rambam wrote. This is not the printer. Sefer Shvi'i, the seventh book. Who Sefer Ezraim? Hilchotav Sheva, seven units. Vizeu Siduram, and this is the order. Kilayim, Hilchot Matnot Aniyim. Matnot Aniyim is all different types of gifts to the Aniyim. Last parak he talks about we call Tzedaka. Hilchot Trumot, which goes to the Kohen. Hilchot Maasrot, goes to the Levi. Hilchot Maaser Sheni and Neter Ravai. Hilchot Bikurim, goes to the Kohen, Ushaar Matnot Keuna, Shebegvulin, Hilchot Shmitav Yovel. All these seven units are part of Sefer Zraim. Now, in the Moreh Nebuchim, in source number two, so here in the third section where Rambam deals with the Tamei Mitzvot, so Rambam teaches us that the purpose of the mitzvah is to train the Jew to be a giving individual. That you know, what we have is for purpose of helping others. It's a, you know, so some people have more, some people have less. But obviously, you have to attend to your needs, but not to hog it all up for yourself. But to consider that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has placed a due amount of bracha in your possession, so that those who do not have, you become an agent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help. Remember, my grandfather Al-Sham told me once that there was a Chassidish Rebbe in Europe before the war, of course, who said that there is a time that you have to be a heretic, an apokryphus. God doesn't exist. When? He says, a poor person comes to you for assistance. So you say, oh, the Rabbi Shalom is going to help. He's good. He's great. They say, no. There's no Rabbi Shalom in the picture. Now you have to help. You have to help. Just forget the Rabbi Shalom right now. Put him on the side. It's your obligation to help. And I remember once Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal was at a dinner in America at some cause. So of course you have to guess Devana, who gives a lot of money. So the guest of honor speaks. So sometimes the guest of honor gets up and speaks with humility the way he should speak, and sometimes he speaks with less humility. And let's just say less humility. And Ramesh Feinstein felt that this particular guest of honor had gone totally overboard in terms of flaunting his wealth and so on, so on, so on. So Ramesh, when he gets to speak, he does something which was a little risky, considering that you want this guest of honor to be on your side for the next dinner also, whether he's the guest of honor or not. So Rav Moshe gets up and he says, just wants the guest of honor to know that we all thank him, appreciate him, but you should know that it's not your money. It's all the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And he was so kind to deposit it in your bank so that you should have the opportunity to share it with others. That's the way you look at it. That's all. I remember when I asked the Rav a very personal question about the tzedakah, I think you may have heard this from me once, but what the import was, we had heard rumors that the Rav was giving tons of tzedakah. I mean, you know, to be a philanthropist, you have to have a lot of money. You know, it's not that everybody was giving nickels and dimes, and he was giving quarters. So he was giving tons of money because I heard from friends of the Rav in the 50s, somebody told me just a few years ago, and it was confirmed by the Rav, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's son, Meir Lichtenstein. When I tell you, has a rubber stamp of approval. It really happened. It's not like some of the stories Rabbi Perelwein always talks about. These stories happened, the others should have happened, the others could have happened. But this mamish happened. That the Rav in the 50s was asked by some of his friends who were geniuses in the financial world, to everybody has some savings at home in the bank, whatever, to play with the money a little bit on the market and investments. The Rav became a millionaire. The Rav became actually a millionaire. No, people don't know this. A mamish, a millionaire in seven digits. And but what people also don't know is that he gave away 60% of his fortune to tzedakah. 60%. He was sending monies to his cousins here in Eretz Yisrael, the Brisk Yeshiva, supporting it, who didn't look at him, who didn't want to talk to him because the Rav committed the two great averas for going to the university and Nebuch becoming a Mizrahi. Oish. And their cousins in Geula didn't want to look at him, and the Rav sending, in the 1960s, he's sending $10,000 a year. Now, I just want you to understand what $10,000 a year was in 1960s. In 1964, to buy an apartment in Rehavia A nice apartment in Rehavia was $42,000. That's what it cost. $42,000. So if somebody was giving a donation of $10,000, think of what a nice apartment in Rehavia costs today, and take a quarter of that, and you'll see what kind of fortune the Rav was giving to his cousins in Gula. Fortunes. He was really keeping that yeshiva going, the Brisk Yeshiva, almost single-handedly. And they didn't look at him. They didn't react to it. The Rav did it anyway. Because, you know, like in the mafia, don't mess with the family, you know. The family.
But they took the money anyway.
Of course they took the money. Money, lo mekabel tuma. That's not a problem. Money. But the Rav supported his own yeshiva in Maimonides, Brookline, for Massachusetts, gave a lot of money to yeshiva. But he also supported private people. I don't want to even name names, because some of the names are well-known Rabbonim who needed financial help. And the Rav gave money to Dr. Belkin, so Dr. Belkin and Weinberg should give Rav XY a salary, but there was no budget for that Rav XY, but the Rav financed a salary for one of the Rashivas in YU, Ad Kedei Kach, so they shouldn't be let go. I mean, he did things that were just unbelievable, Matan Baseiter, nobody knew about it, unpublicized. He was just absolutely sensational. So we heard he was giving 60%. So once in the car with him, I had the chutzpah to ask him, I said, Rebbe, how does this jive with what the Rambam says, Al yibazbez yoter michomesh, don't give more than 20%. You're supposed to give 10%. You give 20%, all right. But why not 6%? The reason is because the Chazal were worried that if you're going to give away most of your money, one day you might be broke, and then all of a sudden you're going to be poor and destitute. So don't do it. You know, keep something. Make sure that there's something for tomorrow and the day after in your own pocket. So 20%, that's the limit. So the Rav could have easily enough not reacted to my question. He could have dismissed it. He could have got angry. I mean, he could have done a lot of things. He looked at me and he said, you obviously forgot a pasuk in Kohelet. So which pasuk in Kohelet? He says, Ki adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher ya'aseh tov v'lo yecheta. No human being goes through life without at least one avera. And I didn't want to make Shlomo Melech into a liar. That's what he told me. So he was funny, but it was confirmation. And I got confirmation from Rav Meir Lichtenstein afterwards that it was true. He gave 60%. But then the Rav goes on to explain. He says, what? I think he didn't understand what the Chazal was saying. He says, I have no expenses in life. I live by my daughter in Boston. I have food on the table. You know, I don't have expenses in life. So what am I supposed to do with this money? I'm supposed to help people. So he felt that he was able to go overboard. He even told me in this little talk, he says, and after 120 years, the Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to read the indictment. You know, you overdosed on Stoker, you know, this great Avera. And the Rav told me, he said, I'm going to smile before Kisei HaKovod and say, guilty as charged. He said, all right, do something to me. That's what he said. That's what he told me. He said, guilty as charged. Pshad. Okay, so I gave too much Stoker. No. Never. We should all have such Averas. So the Rambam says that this is a training mission. That's why the Rambam says elsewhere, while I didn't bring another daf, it's in Pirkei Avot. In the third parak, the Rambam says in his Perusha Mishnah that if you have, let's say, 100 of a denomination, say 100 shekel, 100 shekel to give tzedakah, you have two choices. You give one guy 100 shekel, you made him happy, you made his week. Or you can give 100 aniyim ve'avyonim, one shekel each. What does one shekel do? The man's going to have to still continue collecting. What's the better deal? He says you give 100 different people one shekel. He says, because if you give one person 100 shekel, he said it's hard to dip into the pocket and separate yourself from your money. All right, you did it once. You held your breath. You put a clip on your nose. You did it. Fine. But if you have to do it 100 times, irrespective of the fact that you're only giving one shekel each time, you're going to give the 100 first also. Because you have trained yourself to be a giving individual. And the Rambam says in Marna Gubra, source number 2, that this is really the crux of the mitzvot of the matnot aniyim. A mitzvot asher yichlalam haklal harevi, the Rambam divided all of the mitzvot into 14 categories of ta'amei mitzvot, mitzvah rationale. Hey, masha kalal otam b'sefer zraim chiburenu, what I already wrote in the book of Zraim in my sefer. Marna Gubra was written several years after the completion of the Mishneh Torah. It says, except for Kalayim, I'm going to talk about certain exceptions here, but if I just jump to the fourth line, he says, Kichemlata aniyim vadalim v'lazor ebyonim b'minim chalukim שלא יציק לצרך ולא יענה לו לב איש חלוש בעניינו כאלמנה ויתום כיוצא בהן. This is done to guarantee that you have compassion on all those who are needy in society. I mean, these are the weakest links of society, and these people require the help of able, you know, financially able people, and that's our responsibility. And then he says with Truma and Maaser as well. Truma, the Kohen is not employed on the field. You have to realize, Daisa Chazal, about 95% of the population engaged in agriculture. You know, somewhere in some type of level of commerce, let's say 90%. We know Shevet Zvulun, they were involved in international trade. Okay, but the Shevet Levi, which included the Levim and the Kahanim, they were the educators. Yoru Mishpatecha LeYakov V'Toratcha LeYisrael. Therefore, they were never given a section in the land of Eretz Yisrael, in the division of Eretz Yisrael. They were given 48 cities from the north to the south. They were spread out. And their purpose was to be the educators on the local level. What about Beit HaMikdash activity? So when you already have a nation of so many Kohanim and Leviim, how many Kohanim did you have to have on duty at Beit HaMikdash? Not many in a given day, except for Yom Tov, of course, before Pesach. So, you know, they whistled and they blew them all, they brought them all out. You know, Giyus, the Miluim. But a Kohen was serving at Beit HaMikdash 2 weeks a year. That's all. And in the 2 weeks a year, he actually worked a day a week. So he works out that he served Beit HaMikdash 2 days a year, but he was available just in case you know, somebody got sick from the other Torah, whatever. So he was on duty in Beit HaMikdash for 2 weeks. So too with the Levim. So what are you doing for 50 weeks? The 52 weeks in a year. They were teachers. That's what they were doing. So we, as Am Yisrael, had to finance their living. And that's what the Truma and the Maaser is all about. So the Maaser, why does the Levi get 10% and the Truma, the Minat Torah, he just gets a grain, but Chachamim said about 2%? Because the Kohen's getting other things too. I mean, my gosh, he's getting parts of the animal korbanot, parts of the korbanot mincha, the bikurim. He's getting so much to eat. You know, it's not an issue. And the Leviim, so they receive 10% of the agricultural produce. You can live off that as well, and so on. So, of course, the Leviim could then market it if they wanted to, and if they needed money to buy meat, if they wanted to eat meat, they could have done that as well. So the Rambam says, all of these mitzvot, most of them at least, that he talks about in Seder Zoraim, are mitzvot that are guaranteed to cultivate the art of giving. And that's why he uses the pasuk, Tehei yadcha le'azreni ki kudecha bacharti, ezer, zera, they're words that, and you know, the Rambam didn't make this up, that you can shift these letters and come up with nice ideas. The Torah itself does it. You know, the word keves and kesev is used in the Torah. Samla and simla, like a dress, and salma, they're both, they're there. You have this interchange in the Torah itself. So it can be done. Okay, now get to the idea that we did not develop adequately enough on the level of biyat kulchem. So we said that there is a concept that these mitzvahs are activated when Am Yisrael resides in Eretz Yisrael. The signal in the Chumash itself that we're talking about an Eretz Yisrael bound mitzvah is usually the headline, Ki Tavoa La'aretz, when you'll come to the land. Not every mitzvah says that, but those that do say that, it says Ki Tavoa La'aretz. But that only refers to the agricultural mitzvot. Of course, in the Sefer Zraim, in source number one, are all the agricultural mitzvot. But you know, there is a whole slew of mitzvot that are Eretz Yisrael oriented and they're non-agricultural. And I'll just give a name a few. Kiddush HaChodesh and Ibur HaShanah can only be performed in Eretz Yisrael. The giving of the smicha of once upon a time, Ish Mipi Yesh of Moshe Rabbeinu, can only be done in Eretz Yisrael. And many other mitzvot are Eretz Yisrael mitzvot. And the question that comes up is the map of Eretz Yisrael. We know that halachically there are two maps of Eretz Yisrael. Politically, geopolitically, there are many, many, many maps of Eretz Yisrael from the days of Avraham Avinu until today. Many, many different maps. The lines have been drawn over and over and over again geopolitically. But we talk about the halachic maps. So we talk about the map of Olei Mitzrayim, where finally the entering Eretz Yisrael, there's Yeshua Ben Nun, which does not complete itself until the days of David HaMelech. It takes a long time until to bring the fruition of the promise of Minahar Mitzrayim at Nahar Agadol Nahar Prat. It takes a long time. That's one map of Eretz Yisrael. And then the second map of Eretz Yisrael is the second Beit HaMikdash, which is much more reduced. It's a smaller map of Eretz Yisrael. And the question is, which map is relevant today when we talk about the mitzvot of Eretz Yisrael? The answer is, it depends which of the categories of Eretz Yisrael mitzvot we're talking about. If we're talking about the agricultural mitzvot, then we're looking at the smaller map. We're looking at the map of Eretz Yisrael that remains sanctified in spite of the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. That map is still active today, halachically. But if we're talking about the other mitzvot, like Kiddush HaChodesh and Yibur HaShanah, or Smicha, or for that matter, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, right? As far as I know, it does not include Golda's Green, it does not include Bar Park or Muncie. It actually doesn't include some other important cities, but of Jewish. But you have to know where the borders of Eretz Yisrael. So here we look at the larger map. So if you take, for example, in the year of Shemitah, so there are no small number of people who would prefer eating Israeli-grown produce, but somehow sidestepping the Shemitah issue, and that's easily accomplished by purchasing produce from the Negev area, from the Arava area. That whole area from Sdom down to Eilat is part of the larger map of Eretz Yisrael and not part of the smaller map. It was never part of Eretz Yisrael in the days of Bayit Sheni, the Second Temple era. Having said that, they are Israeli produced, and if somebody lives in those areas, certainly fulfills the mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz, living in Eretz Yisrael, yet those areas are not governed by the laws of Shemitah, because it's outside the pale of the second map, which is shorter, which is smaller. And that's important. That's a very, very important statement. And I remember one year, this year they did a last Shemitah, they did a little differently. But I remember 1980, when I was here after Aliyah, the first year was Shemitah, Toshin Mem. So the various supermarkets would have signs, and one of the signs would say, Gvulot Parshat Mas'ei. Means, you know, you don't have to just bring a sal, you know, but you have to bring a Tanakh. And to read the boundaries. Yeah, it's
the way. Wouldn't you feel that you would hold by the biblical boundaries, because that is the land that was given to us, and if we hold our home as sower based on Kumash, those are the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael?
Correct. They're the boundaries. The only thing is, when I ask people, so when does Eretz Yisrael become holy, people, you know, just blurt out of Avraham Avinu, which is so not true. Avraham Avinu never received Eretz Yisrael as a holy entity. Holiness, as the Rabbi always talked about, is a human effort to make something holy. A human being has to dedicate something specifically for Avodat Hashem, for the service of God. It could be anything in the created world. We say under the chuppah, Shakol bara mikvodo. Everything was created for His glory, that is to say, can become hallowed, can become sacred, by isolating it. Kedusha means separation. You have to separate Mavdil bin Kodesh Lachol. So Avraham Avinu received a promise, so it's called Eretz Muftachat Me'avoteinu. That's all, it's promised land. But it became sanctified only after the military conquest from the beginning days of Yeshua, ending days of David HaMelech. The problem was, as the Rambam will teach us, that the conquest of the Babylonians of Eretz Yisrael undid the conquest of Yeshua until David HaMelech. And hence, for 70 years, Eretz Yisrael was not holy. And therefore, anybody who happened to have been in Eretz Yisrael in the 70 years, the interim 70 years of the Babylonian exile, was exempt from all the agricultural mitzvot of Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael necessarily had to be sanctified in order to kick off these mitzvahs. And with regard to the second Beit HaMikdash, it becomes sanctified again, not by military conquest, but by settlement, what the halacha calls chazakah. We call it yashvut, it nachalut, whatever, but it's called settlement of the land. And the Rambam believes, I'll explain in a few minutes, why the settlement of the land, in spite of the second exile, did not cause the abolition of the Kedusha. So the Kedusha is still here, till this very day, but it's limited to the map of where the settlement took place in Bayit Sheni. But with regard to that which the Rabbi quoted his father and his grandfather, that there's a thing called Shem Eretz Yisrael, the place that has a name in Halakha called Eretz Yisrael, that's the larger map of Avraham Avinu. So that's where Kiddush HaChodesh, Yibur HaShanah, because that's the Rambam says, that's the address of Klal Yisrael, and those mitzvot that are Klal Yisrael oriented have to be, like Kiddush HaChodesh and Yibur HaShanah and Smicha, so they have to be performed in the boundaries that's Am Yisrael territory. Am Yisrael territory is the large map. So that's what I said, but with regard to Shemitah, you know, you can live in the Arava or buy fruits from the Arava because it's Israeli grown produce. And I say Israeli, not in the state of Israel. Israeli in the sense of Eretz Yisrael grown produce. But it's not subject to the restrictions of Shemitah because it's out of the boundaries of Beit Sheni. So it's one of the solutions, by the way, for the Shemitah dilemma in our days. So one of the necessary prerequisites for mitzvot hatliot ba'aretz, for the agricultural mitzvot to be in effect, is that land has to be sanctified. The second is, and it's not valid for all the mitzvot, that in order for the mitzvot to be active, you have to have all of Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. Now, all of Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael is a real problem. That's the phrase, biyat kulchem. Because I already mentioned last week, you just flip the page again to source number 9, the last source on the page. The author of the Sefer Chinuch, in the context of the Mitzvah Challah, in the last two lines, Menoheget bizcharim nekevot, men and women have to take off challah from the dough. The Eretz Yisrael bilvad midoraita. Biblically, challah is only in Eretz Yisrael, even though we may have practiced it in Chutz Laaretz, but that was rabbinic. Shenemar, as it says, ba'acholchem yilechem haaretz. V'dafke bizman shekol Yisrael sham. Only when all of Am Yisrael is there. Klomar, that is to say, ruban. I didn't mean all. I mean most. Now that's an extremely important line. Extremely important line. Because if the halakha would be all, then can you imagine one guy of Klal Yisrael who's got it out for Am Yisrael, who's got it out for Yeshua, he's got it out for the Rabban Shlom, you know, so what he's going to do? He's going to leave the land. Leave land, you know, and be mitzvah on everybody, as we say. So now you don't have a mitzvah d'oraita. That's absurd. You can't have a scenario like that. So what the author of the Chinuch does, and he's really the only one to say it so bluntly and clearly in days of the Rishonim. The Rambam never says it, that it's roiv, it's majority. Maybe it's just assumed because it's so logical. But the author of the Chinuch said, you know, he had to spell it out. There is a halakha that we use in the Yoredeya, you know, all the time. Rubo ki kulo. The majority is considered halachically as if it's the whole thing. Majority rules. Acharei rabim lehatot. That it's not just the halakha says that if you have the three, you know, hot dogs. I still have some hot dogs in the brain, right? Nothing in the gastronomical system because they didn't touch it. They didn't touch the hot dogs. But if you have three hot dogs in a pot, dry, no aqueous solution in the pot, okay? Three hot dogs, whatever. Hot dogs look like hot dogs, you know? They don't yell out, I'm the treif one. You know for sure that two out of three are kosher and the third one is treif. Somebody told you, absolutely. And you're looking at them, and there's no way to discern, to pick out which is the treif one. So what do? So I've asked this question to many groups. I've asked it here years ago as well. Most people wouldn't eat any of them if that were the case, because you're all tzaddikim, right? And then Ramot, one lady said, for sure you have to kasha the pot, and the third or fourth lady said, it's time to do shiputzim on the kitchen. Right, we do the whole kitchen. Right. Of course, the answer is, you have your seatbelts on, I don't want anybody falling off now. You can eat all three. You need it. It's called Rubo Ki Kulo. Now, rabbinically, the Eitzah is, there's a good reason why it's not. You take one indiscriminately, obviously you don't know which is the treif one, because you know which is the treif one, there's no Shaila. You just take one, throw it in the garbage, and you eat the other two. Because when you throw one out, you've cut down the odds. Now you're playing with statistics. First of all, you know, you may have thrown out the real treif one, maybe. 33% chance that you threw out the real treif one. But even if you didn't, the halacha says that all three were kosher anyway. So you're allowed to eat it. And if you don't, if you throw out all three, it's baltashkas. All right, you don't want to eat it? Give it to the dog, okay? Fine. But you're allowed to eat it. You're allowed to eat it. Because that's the halacha of Acher Rabim Latot. It's not that you're eating two-thirds kosher and a third treif. Ruo kekulo means you're eating 100% kosher. The same HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that this meat is treif, said that in the context of such a mixture, they're all kosher. It's the same Rabban Shalom. Like I once told my grandfather, Shalom, because of diabetic reasons, he had to eat on Yom Kippur. And he said, for 70 years I'm fasting Yom Kippur. This doctor's going to tell me that I have to eat on Yom Kippur. I said, the same Rabban Shalom that said, V'initem et nafshotichem, on Yom Kippur said, V'chai v'hem, that you have to live. That's all. It's as simple as that. It's the same Rabban Shalom. You know, they're not gonna. So in a case of three dayanim in a monetary litigation, so two out of three say the fellow is obligated to pay, and the third says no, he's exempt from paying. So he doesn't pay two thirds; he pays 100% of what the issue was. Because he's 100% chayav, he's 100% obligated. That's the halakha of Rubo Kikulo, or the way Rav's grandfather, Rav Chaim from Brisk, formulated it. He says, Mi'ut mitapech liot rov. Kirchedek me'rov. The minority flips and becomes part of the majority. It's that the judges voted, and two said chayav and one said patur, and now the halakha says also three said chayav. The guy who said patur, his vote halakhically switches to chayav. It flips over. And that's why he's 100% chayav. And the treif naknikiya flipped over from treif to kosher. We're employing the halakha of acharei rabim lahatot. So clearly, if we have the majority of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, so there's a minority in Chutz La'aretz, okay, b'seder, but the halakha views this as kulon, as if they're all here, and that's good enough. That's really good enough. And by the way, we're getting close. We're getting awfully close. Another, we should all be well, another 10 years we're there, and about 46.5% of Am Yisrael is in Eretz Yisrael today, and we have not had a scenario of Ruba Kekuloi in Eretz Yisrael for the last 2,600 years. Since the Galut of 10 tribes of Aseret HaShvatim. 2,600 years ago was the last time the majority of Am Yisrael was in Eretz Yisrael. And you should know that if you read the papers this weekend for Yom HaTzmaut, a lot of articles, if you read the Makor Rishon, there are quite a few good articles on this, how even in the Haredi world, where it was, you know, at best de facto acceptance of the state, and at worst, you know, downright antagonism to the state, there's a certain rapprochement going on. There's a process going on right now of coming together. It's slow, it's gradual, but it's actually happening. It's actually happening in different areas, in the workforce, in the army. There's no doubt there's more and more of an acceptance of what the Medina, what the state is all about. And one of the people interviewed in one of the articles said, look, can you deny the fact that there are 6.5 million Jews here? And it was the state that did it. It wasn't the Panovich Yeshiva that did it, but it's the state that did it. The state did it. And I quoted here, I said yesterday in a few minutes' talk, quoting also from Makor Rishon, that they said that even the Neturi Karta, these downright anti-Zionists, have also begun recognizing the state of Israel. How do you know? Because, you know, on Yom HaTzma'ut, they done sak ve'efer, they have sacks of, and they fast. So they announced that the fast was on Tuesday, not Monday, because the state moved Yom HaTzma'ut from Monday to Tuesday. So you see that there was de facto recognition, that's right, de facto recognition of Medinat Yisrael. They fasted, because they should have fasted on Monday, on the 5th of Iyar. But no, the state made the Yom HaTzma'ut on Tuesday. So now, so the Tzayim is on Tuesday. See? You may laugh, but you know, it's a small thing, but it also shows that there is de facto recognition, whether they like it or not. The little kinderlach in Me'er Sharim all speak Ivrit, whether they like it or not. They speak Ivrit. So you have this idea of Biat Kulchem. So you go to source number 4. And source number 4 is where the Rambam gives us the halakha of chala. So I already mentioned last week, let me just repeat one second, the Rambam could have classified chala in a better place, in the laws of truma, because in Ilchot Truma, first of all, Torah calls it truma. It calls it truma. Tarim chala, tarim utruma. And the laws of chala are identical to the laws of truma. So that's where it should have been. So why did he put it into the laws of Bikurim? So I already mentioned last week that the common theme of Ilchot Bikurim are the first of everything. This is where he's going to talk about Bikurim, the first fruits. He's going to talk about Pinyon HaBen. He's going to talk about Reshit HaGez, after the share of the wool of the animal. Wherever the Torah says Reshit, he's going to talk about it in Bikurim. So Chala is a type of Bikurim. Reshit, it says there, Arisotechem, the first part of your dough. So and this goes back to the korban of Kayan, not Kayan, of Hevel. The Hevel hevi mibchorot tzono umichel vehem. The Hevel brought the first, because the first, there are a lot of sentimental attachments to the first. It's your baby, it's the first one, it's a, you don't want to enjoy and get, you know. And dafka the first, you bring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a korban, which is showing that it's all a HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so that's why the Rambam talks about it in Hilchot Bikurim. If you look at the last paragraph of source number 4, which is Halacha Hei, Ein chayavim b'chala min haTorah ele b'eretz Yisrael b'lvad, sheneimar v'ya b'acholchem milechem ha'aretz, and so on, u'bizban shekol Yisrael sham, sheneimar b'vo'achem, Biat kulchem v'lo biat miktzatchem. You got to have mol and not just part. Part, as we explained, is less than 50%. Lefikach, therefore, chalab is manazeh. Rambam's writing in the 12th century. Afilu bimei Ezra be'eretz Yisrael. Even in the days of Ezra in Eretz Yisrael, in the days of Bayit Sheni, eina ella midivrehem is only rabbinic, because in Bayit Sheni you did not have the majority of Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. We had about 5% of Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael in Bayit Sheni. Compare that to 46.5% today. And you know, and that wasn't an Israeli flag with an Israeli army. That was Beit HaMikdash with the Kohen Gadol going into the Kodesh Kodeshim and Yom Kippur. And 95% opted for America. They called America a different name. They called it Bavel. But as the Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, the Kuzari, describes it so perfectly. They were settled. The grandparents were refugees. And now we're settled, Baruch Hashem. And we have our homes. We have our fields. We have our businesses. Now we're going to rock the boat with Aliyah. You know, so they didn't come. They didn't come. And Ezra died a very frustrated person because of that. And the Gemara says, by the way, had Am Yisrael come in mass, at least the majority, plus, there never would have been a second Korban. Which means those who did not come, for all good, well-intentioned, legitimate reasons, brought down the second Beit HaMikdash. They didn't give it a chance for it to survive as a Beit HaMikdash. Very sad. Lefika chalap is manazeh, filo b'mi Ezra, b'eretz Yisrael, eina ela b'divrahem, kamo she'biarnu b'truma, as I explained it in the laws of Truma. And now we're going to flip the page and see in source number 6, what did the Rambam say in Hilchot Truma? So here the Rambam says, HaTrumot vaMasrot einan noagot noagin min haTorah ele beretz Yisrael. Truma and Maser, the Truma that we give to the Kohen, the Maser Rishon we give to the Levi, and the Maser Sheni, that the next 10% we are supposed to ourselves bring to Yerushalayim and eat it the next opportunity in Yerushalayim, ele only in Eretz Yisrael. Whether Beit Midrash is standing or not makes no difference. Because these mitzvot are not dependent on the existence and functioning of a Beit HaMikdash. Our prophets have established, there was always this question of the fine line of the border. Where exactly is the border? Because if you have the exact border, then 1 foot here, 1 foot there, you know, you don't know where you are. You're in Chutz Laaretz, you're in Eretz Yisrael. So very similar to the concept of the border of the sanctity of time. So the Gemara says that a Kadosh Baruch Hu knows exactly when the day ends and when the next day begins. Called kechut hasara. It's like a hair. Like a hair. Yet the halacha says, you know, we're not sure. Is it sundown? Is it Seter Kochavim? And all different opinions as to when sundown halachically is and when Seter Kochavim. That's why if you get four different calendars, you're going to get 25 different opinions. When's the end of time for Mincha? When you can say Count Sfira? And all this in Shabbat. And, you know, he holds Rabbeinu Tam and he holds the Ramban and so on. And, you know, I was once a speaker by my brother in Teaneck for Shabbos, and I spoke, among other things, between Mincha Marif, towards the end of President of Shul, Rinat Yisrael in Teaneck. He says, you know, Rabbi, you can speak till the end of Shabbos. Okay, great. So I got up there. I thought I was going to be funny. I said, I heard in Rinat, they hold from Rabbeinu Tam. Gives me another 20 minutes. The Rabbi of Shul, happens to be my brother, gets up in front of everybody. He says, there's no Rabbeinu Tam in Rinat when the Yankees are playing the Red Sox on Motzei Shabbos. On Motzei Shabbos. Okay. Hey, Vanti. You know? Said? You know, you can't say that over and over in the Chumah. They wouldn't know you're talking about it. So the Gemara tells us that because human beings cannot focus on chut hasara, you know, like a hairline division between day and night. So we are machmer. We start Shabbat from Shkia, from sundown. We end Shabbat from Seter Kochavim. So Shabbat is not 24 hours. It's 24 hours plus. It's a little extra on both sides. And we do this because we just want to make sure that we're not transgressing on any level. So too with regard to Kedushat Makom. So you've got a line that's the absolute border. But Chazal said, you know, we can extend the border, a little bit of a demilitarized zone on Chutz Laaretz, and there too we'll give Truma and Meiser from there because we're so close to Eretz Yisrael. And that's what the Rambam says here. Smuchal Eretz Yisrael. V'rov Yisrael hochim v'shavim sham. Because there's a lot of interchange and commerce and travel. So let's make sure that people are keeping the trumas and isers. V'achachamim rishonim hitkinu sh'yeh no'agim af beretz Yisrael u'beretz amon u'mo'av Shehem Svivot Eretz Yisrael. So Mitzrayim, we know where Egypt is, and Ammon Moav is where today Jordan and a little bit Saudi Arabia is, which means it's still close. It's not Canada, it's not Johannesburg, it's not Sydney, Australia. Fine. And then the next halacha, that's halacha Aleph. Notice, that was halacha Aleph. And now I'm jumping to the next paragraph, which is halacha Kav Vav, 26, which is the last halacha of this first chapter of the Hilchot Trumot. Then the Rambam says, Hatruma bizman hazeh today, afilu b'mukom shechziku ole bavel, even in the smaller map of Eretz Yisrael, of Bayit Sheni, that does, is endowed with Kedusha, with sanctity, afilu b'me Ezra, even days of Ezra in Bayit Sheni, einam min haTorah ele midivrehem. It's only rabbinic. She'en lecha truma shel Torah ele b'Eretz Yisrael b'lvad. The only time you have truma in the Torah, a biblical truma, is in Eretz Yisrael. U'bizman shekol Yisrael sham, you have to have all of Am Yisrael there. She'nemar, as it says, ki tavo, b'yad kulchem, it has to be all there. Kishayu b'yirusha rishona, u'kemo she'en atidin lachzor b'yirusha shlishit. The way it was the first time around, that means the days of Yeshua until David HaMelech, and that's what's going to be the third time around. Here we are, right? Lo kishayu b'yirusha shniya, not the second time around. The second time around, by Cheney, it wasn't. Shaita b'me'ezra, shaita b'yat miktzatchem, miktzatam. There's only partial aliyah. Ulefikach, therefore, lo chiva otam min haTorah. No biblical obligation of truma. And that's, the Rambam says, halachically very strong. And the question, where does he get this from? Because b'yat kulchem is mentioned in the sources only with regard to challah. But the Rambam most probably took the challah and he said, once again, challah is a truma, so it's got to be right for truma also. But then he goes further and he said, v'chein yireli. And I think, when the Rambam says that, by the way, means he has no source. He has no source for this. Shu'a din b'masrot. What's true for truma is going to be true for maser also. She'ein chayavim b'zman hazeh ele b'divrahem kitruma. Ma'aseh rishon, ma'aseh sheni. It's also rabbinic today. It's just like truma. So the Ravid, who's the Ravid? Rabbi Avraham ben David, from Pau Square, that's to South France. He's an elder contemporary of the Rambam. Gets a hold of a copy, one of the early copies of Mishneh Torah of the Rambam, makes it to South France. And here's this aging scholar in Provence. And he hears this young upstart, Moshe ben Maimon, claiming that he's writing about everything. Kol haTorah kula. Nobody ever been so bold enough to undertake such a project. Alright, let's see what this Moshe ben Maimon from Egypt has to say. And he wants to really put him down. So he does a type of book review on the Mishneh Torah of the Rambam, but with language that is so sharp and almost insulting. I mean, he will say, Zehevel, this is Narishkeit, this is nonsense, and this is not true, and this is not. Look what he says over here, Hasagot HaRavid. He quotes, HaTrumah b'Ban HaZeh, and so on. So it begins the next line, Aleph Aleph. Aleph Aleph means Amar Avraham. Avraham ben David is speaking. Lo kivein lahalacha yafeh. He's got it all wrong, halachically. He's commenting on the Rambam. He's got it all wrong. Da kaimalan, because we are in halacha, ki Rabbi Yochanan, who says the Amar in Masechet Yevamot, Truma bezman hazeh midoraita. There's an opinion in the Gemara that says that today Truma is biblical. And therefore, that's the halacha. The Huat small, and get a load of this, he says. He himself, Moshe ben Maimon, Mirei shekach katab b'tchilat ha-sefer. Where I'm now at the last halakha of this first chapter. Halakha kavav. I'm reading 25 halakhot before I get to this one. And this is such a novel idea, nobody in a million years would have thought about this. And even from the impression that I'm reading from the Rambam, of course Truma today is d'oraita. It's biblical. Then all of a sudden he hits you with this in his last comment of Halakha Kavav in 26. He says, Vim Ita, if you want to, Laha Milta, if you want to accept what he's saying about Bi'at Kulchem and not Bi'at Mitzatchem, you have to have all, not some. Bechalahu Di'ita. It's relevant for Chala, for Hashat Chala. That's true, says the Ravid. Chala, in order to be active, it has to be majority of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. But who said that's true for Truma and Maisa? Not only who said, if I would have ignored this last halacha, the impression created in the first 25 halachot of this chapter was that Truma is biblical today. So what exactly happened? So I'm going to stick my neck out and give you a theory of mine, that when the Rambam authored Hilchot Truma, it only, first chapter only had 25 chapters, halachot. And he wrote it in respect to the halacha that Truma today is biblical. But then he had a second thought. He says, you know, there is biat kulchem for challah, and maybe it applies for Truma, and maybe it also applies for Meiser. Let's go with it. So instead of rewriting the whole chapter, he simply writes a mafter. He has an addendum, a postscript, which is halacha kavav, a postscript. And the postscript says, and by the way, everything that I just said, just take it with a grain of salt, because it's really not biblical. You got the impression all along that you had to be an Eretz Yisrael, had to be an Eretz Yisrael, had to be an Eretz Yisrael. Now I'm telling you, you have to be an Eretz Yisrael only when majority of Am Yisrael is an Eretz Yisrael. So last, it's like, it's not a minute point, by the way. It's most probably something that the Rambam should have alerted us much earlier in the chapter. And by saying this at the very end, and what tips it off is that the Ravid says, V'hu atzmon nireh shekach katav b'tchilat ha-sefer. And I'm reading this whole chapter, and there's nothing strange, I had nothing to comment, and all of a sudden, boom, the roof comes in and caves in halacha kavav. What is he saying here? This is wrong. This is wrong. And the whole impression of the chapter. So what basis could I say that the Rambam originally wrote 25 halachot, not 26? And halacha kavav was an add-on when he changes his mind on the subject? So let's go back now to source number 5, the bottom of the first page. Again, an expression of ani omer, I say. That means the Rambam is saying something without a source in the Talmudic literature, the Gemara, the Babli, Yerushalmi, Medrash. V'lama ani omer, why do I say? The Mikdash v'Yerushalayim, with regard to Mikdash and Yerushalayim, Kedusha Rishona Kitchal Atid Lavo. The sanctity of Yerushalayim from the days of David HaMelech is eternal now. That's it. One churban, two churban, does make a bit of a difference. The sanctity is there. Ubekdushat Sha'ar Eretz Yisrael, but the sanctity of the rest of Eretz Yisrael, Le'inyan Shvi'it U'Masrot, with respect to the mitzvot, the agricultural mitzvot of Eretz Yisrael, Shemitah and Maisa, Ukiyotzei Ben and all the others, Lo Kitchal Atid Lavo. The sanctity of Eretz Yisrael was abandoned after the second Churban. That which gives the sanctity of Yerushalayim is because it's God's resting place. And in Har Sinai, Kadosh Baruch Hu comes down for 120 days from Shavuot until Yom Kippur. And it's very holy. Nobody's allowed to walk on Har Sinai. Big Balta, you should make boundaries there. Make sure nobody trespasses the boundaries. But the minute Yom Kippur is over, the first Yom Kippur, Kadosh Baruch Hu's Shekhinah leaves. It's a free-for-all. Anybody can climb Har Sinai if you could identify which mountain it is. We've never even taken the pains to preserve where it is. Because it's totally chulin. There's nothing, no importance. There's no halakhic importance today to Har Sinai. The reason why Har HaMoriah remains kadosh, against the principle that the Rav said, that only that which a human being initiates the Kedusha can become kadosh, is because just like on Har Sinai for 120 days, Kadosh Baruch Hu was there, and that for sure made it a Makom Kadosh for those 120 days. From the days of David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech, Kadosh Baruch Hu never decided never to leave. Never leave. So it's not the Kedusha, it's not the sanctity that we've made it sacred, but it's the sanctity that Kadosh Baruch Hu is still there. Still there. So it's not 120 days. It's 3,000 years. And it's still there. Shechina in Abateila. You can't just erase the Shechina. You can't push the delete button on the presence of God. Whether it's Nebuchadnezzar and Titus of Rome, it's not going to work. Then they can't undo this. And that's what it says. Man, it says, Vashimoti et mikdishechem. V'amru chachamim. Av api sheshomemim b'kedushatan hem omdim. Even if they're destroyed, if the buildings are destroyed, they sanctity remains. That's with regard to Yerushalayim and Mikdash. And that's why the Rambam explains that the laws of Mora HaMikdash, that you're not allowed to dirty the area of Beit HaMikdash, let's say spitting on the ground. If you spit on the ground in Tel Aviv, it's a problem of Derech Eretz. You spit on the ground by the Kotel area, it's a violation of Mikdashi Tira'o, of having awe for the Beit HaMikdash presence. Because you don't do this in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why people feel connected to Davin closer, closer, closer. Because there, it's not a question whether Shechina is there. It's there. Me'olam lo zaza Shechina me'al gabei kotel ha-maravi, as the Medrash says. Aval chiyuv ha'aretz b'shvi'it u'b'masrot, but the obligation of the land of Israel for Shemitah and the Maisras, eino mepnei shehu kibush rabim, because it was conquered by Am Yisrael, days of David HaMelech, Yeshua until David. Kevan shenilkecha ha'aretz bideihem, when the land was taken from our hands, days of Babylonians, Nebuchadnezzar, batela kibush, the conquering, the conquest of Yeshua until David became abolished. V'niftera min ha'torah, min ha'masrot u'b'shvi'it, and they became exempt from these obligations, because there's no sanctity of the land. Sharei eina min ha'aretz, min Eretz Yisrael. It's no longer Eretz Yisrael. Kevan jala Ezra v'kitcha, when Ezra also ascends to Eretz Yisrael and sanctifies the land, lo kitcha b'kibush. He doesn't sanctify the land with conquest. Ela b'chazaka, shechziku ba, it's settlement. V'lefikach, therefore, kol makom shechziku ba olei bavel, the second map, v'nitkadesh b'kdushat Ezra ha'shniya, whom Mikudash Hayom is sanctified till the day. I'm going to try to elaborate this in a second. We don't have much time. The Ava Pishin Ulkacha Aretz Mimenu, even though the land was taken again from us at the days of the destruction, the fall of the second Beit Mikdash, nevertheless, Chayav Bishvi'it Ulimasrot, we would be obligated in Shemitah and in Masrot, in Beit Sheni, and in all the areas of Eretz Yisrael that. In all the areas of Eretz Yisrael that are part of the map of Beit Sheni, Olei Bavel, Al Derech Shebiyarnu B'chol Truma, just like I explained it to you in Hilchot Truma. But one second, what did Rambam explain to us in Hilchot Truma? Just the opposite. That we're exempt from Trumot Masro today in Eretz Yisrael and Shemitah because there's no Biat Kulchem. When the Rambam wrote this, Al Derech Shebiyarnu B'chol Truma, most probably that Halacha Kavav didn't exist yet in his book. He was still writing it in respect to his original view that the laws of Kedusha, of Eretz Yisrael, and Beit Sheni remain after the Churban, and therefore we, not only in the days of Ezra, but we today are obligated in Trumas and Maisras from those areas of the smaller map of Eretz Yisrael. Because that's the way the Rabbi said, that's what it looked like, the Rambam was saying. But what happened was, the Rambam changed his mind. And he wrote an additional maftir, an additional halacha, which flips the whole thing, and most probably never went back to this line to fix it up a little bit. And this is a claim that I believe has some basis to it, and it shows that the Rambam, you know, was very very dynamic in his thinking and was willing to actually. Suggest such a radical change was impacts on the halacha today. Very much impacts on how halacha in terms of biat kulchem. Well, as I said, according to those opinions like the Ravid, that these mitzvot are biblical today, so they're biblical today. But according to most opinions who have adopted the Rambam's final stance, that you still need the majority of Am Yisrael to make all this happen, so we're about 10 years away from it. And then we're going to have to be re-educated for some of these mitzvot. Yeah, Baksha.
So the laws that we're observing now in terms of Jews, like you talked about in like Zoom last week.
Right.
We're doing that because of the Rabbi's understanding?
No, we're doing it because it's rabbinically required. Rabbinically required. Anything that's bit Rabbanan, we also do. So it's rabbinically required. That's all. Okay, next week we'll do another topic, but it may somehow carry into what we talked about today as well. Yeah, okay. I was just asked to remind people, those who come to my Sunday night shiur and the Onachama, my monthly English shiur, this Sunday we will have a shiur. It'll at 8 o'clock. It'll be on the world of Minah. It'll be in the Torah Tidbit, so it should be in the Torah Tidbit. Okay, fine. Announce that.